The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 17th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Oh, it's casual Friday. We are surrounded by dancing leprechauns. Is it it is St. Patty's Day, right?
We're going to go out and party night?
Oh, dude, I'm going to get wasted.
Totally.
It's casual Friday. Yeah. This is the day where I literally will not go outside at all.
Look at all those people out there having fun, Saul. Mm. I used to be them.
No, not on
St. Patty's Day, because I would get punched all over the face in classes, and I just wanted to read Social Security. But Irish guys who looked like Matt Damon would beat on me and call me all sorts of things.
Appearing on the program today, Cliff Schechter, not Irish. Also on the program, Matthew Film Guy. I think his fiance, maybe Irish.
I think she is. Yeah. Half Irish, half Italian.
Meanwhile, Trump's budget as performative sociopathy. Sociopathy?
Sociopathy, you got it.
Trump supposedly has garnered congressional conservative support for his, not his, health care bill. While the Senate looks like it's starting to drift away, Tillerson finally speaks. And he essentially challenges North Korea to war.
I got something on my mind.
Meanwhile,
I'll nuke the hell out of you damn gooks.
Meanwhile, an entire country just begs President Trump to just give up the idea that Barack Obama spied on him.
Never.
And Muslim ban 2.0 rejected by another judge, this time in Maryland. And, of course, Mike Flynn lied about Russian payments.
Wow. Dead!
Yeah, of course. All that and more on today's program. Let me just set the record straight on this whole St. Paddy's thing that's blowing up all over the place here. Back when growing up, like in high school and stuff, Worcester was obviously heavily Irish, and celebrated St. Patrick's Day quite a bit. You know, even had those like shamrocks with the Jewish star in it.
Hi, fellas, can I join?
Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Okay,
Seamus, please. Sean, Seamus,
Sean,
Kathleen.
I thought we were
all
friends.
Of those names
Craig.
Are my cousins' names.
No, everybody.
Sorry that we
they
killed Jesus.
They would have let you join.
Mary, Brian. I mean, all
you aren't just naming every family.
I'm just naming
Mickey.
Everybody.
What about Mickey?
Doyle. And even like when I was in Boston a little bit, but the problem is that. Now, like those guys that I used to hang out with, now I see them as a problem. They come in from not, I'm not saying Irish people. I'm just saying like, 17 to 25 year olds from the suburbs who come in and get wasted. I feel like, I don't.
Everyone likes to party with those potato-eating, soft-head potato mashers, but they are the problem from a public safety and ordinance point of view.
I've got news. I don't think all those people are Irish, and I'm not.
I'm not saying they're all Irish.
I'm not nearly as old as you.
And Kelly was one.
I consider them a complete and total problem, and I never actually was.
I didn't say that I'm that old, and that's why I consider
really
them a problem.
You're really old, though. No. That's why.
Listen to the ancient Jew speak. He is not wrong. He is Moses on this.
I used to work every St. Patrick's Day.
Actually,
and make so much money.
I bet.
Come here, lass. We're decompressing from beating black kids in our cop job.
Oh my god. I even saw two people doing it.
It's a nice time for the Irish when they can go out and get socially active by protesting the inclusion of gay people. Yeah,
wait, I want the goddamn Gaynor parade. That's a totally against family values, like vomiting on your wife's shoes after you've beaten your kid.
I think they're even doing that in Boston. They still, it's like
they got
not
forced in New York. I just really quick.
Unbelievable.
I actually do enjoy St. Patty's Day, and I'll go out tonight. But when we had our office in Midtown, you would get out of the subway literally at 9 o'clock in the morning.
People
I was so disgusted.
I will say this: a couple of years ago, Myla used to take Irish step dancing, and she was in the parade.
Wow,
dancing, and it was freezing and snowing. It's horrible.
My cousins do that. They hate it too.
Let's jump right in here. This you may have missed this. As you know, what was it like now a week ago? Everything just seems like it's longer. Or I feel like time is just now moving so slowly, it feels like.
It was a week and a half ago.
Week and a half ago that Trump wasn't it on a Saturday? So
yes,
it was last weekend.
It was not last weekend.
Oh,
it was the weekend before.
So it was
that.
Almost 2 weeks ago. Donald Trump tweeted out that Barack Obama had wiretapped Trump Tower. And it had gone away, it felt like, but then it had circled back. I'm not quite sure why. And, this is obviously, look, this is, for the most part, just insanity that doesn't have any bearing on things like the way that their austerity-ridden, cruel budget document does. But there are times where it begins to be a little bit more problematic, right? Like, it's not just these things do have implications around the world. And here is Sean Spicer now, I guess, desperately trying to and understand. When we hear Sean Spicer speak, we are just basically hearing Donald Trump's darkest thoughts at 3 a.m. Because he wakes up at 3 a.m. and just is like, Sean, you've got to get out there and push this. And Sean Spicer does. And here is Sean Spicer. I guess he did this yesterday. Did he do this? He did this yesterday as a, I guess it's a way of escaping the charges that the president doesn't know what he's talking about. They're shifting. And here's what Sean Spicer was basically trying to sell yesterday.
On Fox News on March 14th, Judge Andrew Napolitano made the following statement, quote, three intelligence sources have informed Fox News that President Obama went outside the chain of command. He didn't use the NSA. He didn't use the CIA. He didn't use the FBI. And he didn't use the Department of Justice. He used GCHQ. What is that? It's the initials for the British Intelligence Spying Agency. So simply by having two people saying to them, President needs transcripts of conversations involving candidate Trump's conversations involving President-elect Trump, he's able to get it, and there's no American fingerprints on this. Putting the published counts and common sense together, this leads to a lot. All we're doing is literally reading off what other stations and people have reported.
Other
and I think
stations?
That casts into concern of some of the activities that may have occurred during the 16 election. We're not casting judgment on that. I think the idea is to say that if these organizations, these individuals came to these conclusions, they merit looking into.
There you go. So we are told something like this went down.
Hold on,
wait a sec.
Excuse me.
I think it went something like this. Hello.
Hello, this is Barack Obama.
Oh, well, this is the British spying place.
British spying place, great to talk with you again. I'm going to have the usual, which is a wiretap on some white people.
Righto, governor.
I'm going to need a wiretap on Donald Trump and every white person making above $100,000 a year in the panhandle, or as we call it, Malik Shabazz Allah. Which will be renamed after the caliphate is established.
White people, panhandle, right. And how would you like that delivered, sir?
I'm going to want that written up in a transcript so that there's deniability.
Right. Deniability, transcript, right away. You've got it, sir.
You know, Donald Trump is the perfect embodiment of the white devil and his devilish nature, but you are quite the opposite, British spy people. Thank you so much.
Righto. Have a wonderful day.
Allahu Akbar.
Right. Cheerio.
So, so Sean Spicer says this yesterday. And that was just a dramatization, just in case you didn't fully understand what we're going to get cited. Right.
There was a phone call.
I've heard the phone call.
I heard
there was a British guy on one end. He sounded just like just like the chimney sweep in Mary Poppins.
So this was reported by CNN today. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster spoke with his British counterpart on Thursday about John Spicer's comment from the White House podium about a Fox News report that said British intelligence helped wiretap Trump Tower in the 2016 campaign, a White House official said Friday. The official described the conversation as cordial, where McMaster described Spicer's comment as unintentional. McMaster also told his counterpart that, quote, their concerns were understood and heard, and it would be relayed to the White House.
It has to be so stressful to be a person who has a functioning ability to do their job in this administration.
I mean, it's got to be McMaster going like, I'm really sorry.
Literally.
Really sorry. And his counterpart going like, what the fuck is going on? I mean, how worried should we be? And McMaster's probably just like looking around going like, why don't you throw out a number? Like, is this are we at a seven?
I keep
warmer.
Yeah.
Like, are we at like a nine? Should we be worried at like at a nine? Nine.
I keep thinking of that. I don't know why, but that scene that was a funny line in 30 Rock when Tracy Morgan's like, they keep saying I have a drug problem, which is totally racist because I'm straight up mentally ill. I feel like that's like everybody in this administration. Like, he's straight up mentally ill.
And just, you know, wow. I mean, really, and we're going to play some clips of Mick Mulvaney, who is the Office of Budget Management for the White House. And it's like just staring into one of the darkest souls you could ever imagine. And, you know, every day it's like Sean Spicer. Like, how little respect for himself must he have? Or how my God. No, now I understand why they call him Sean Sphincter. I mean, this guy... And probably, you know, it is like a self, it is a feedback loop, right?
Yeah, it's your idiot friends in college, though, who solidified this.
That was way after me. But I'm sure it's a feedback loop. Jesus. Like, however he acts in such a way that people refer to him as Sean Sphincter. And then he wants to get back at all those people for acting like Sean Sphincter. So he acts even more sphincterish.
Even more sphincter. Yeah, well, that's the Stephen Miller principle.
All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Something you said to me, but I can't explain it. Something you said to me, I know you've asked it. Somehow you found me. The words are in motion. Somehow you found me. The words are in motion. I got locked in.
get lost on you.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the saddest things about living in the Trump era, where every week feels like 2 weeks, like where every week feels like it has 9 or 10 business days, is that it feels like we only hear from this guy every month instead of every week. I mean, so I've almost forgotten what this song sounds like.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff. It seems like ages ago that we last spoke.
It really does. You know, it's like the metaphor about dog years versus human years. I mean, I don't know what an actual sort of day is, a Trump day, but I mean, it literally feels like months. It's like the draining nature of that campaign. And I know I've said this many times before, so I'm repeating myself, but it always, that was always like the thing to me, as bad as everything else about him, is that not the policy, this, that the drama we were all going to be dragged through was just going to be, it's like you're just, it's like you feel like you're in quicksand. It never, you're just stuck.
I think
so much crap.
I think it's quite possible that he will be messing up the national actuarial tables, because everyone's going to just age so much more, it feels like. And can you imagine, like, what... And I don't have too much sympathy for her at all, but Melania, who clearly wants to get out of this situation on some level and just live her wealthy life in a castle,
yeah,
without having to deal with her husband. God, she's been living with him for years. That must have just, God.
You know, well, in a way, this, you know, this may be a positive for her.
I bet it is.
She, like, get him, you know, 200 miles away. Keep him there.
Indeed. All right. Well, meanwhile, while Melania has having to deal with less Donald Trump, we're having to deal with more. And let's talk about this budget, because, you know, we were told, there were some who were arguing that Donald Trump was not a true conservative, and that Donald Trump was not going to be as interventionist and militaristic, and on and on and on. And some told us that essentially there's no difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And
yes.
I hope people are taking a bit of a lesson, and you and I won't even
and
have
in fact, to... it got worse than that, Sam. There were some among elements on the left who actually tried to make the argument that Trump would be better for various stupid reasons.
Well,
like,
you know,
it
who
would
knows?
Hasten a change, you know, a new rise of the left, or it would, you know, or she would be more interventionist than him, you know, or...
Pardon?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Stein... 2020.
Michael has to say that. He's now contractually obligated.
Okay, fair enough. She's paying him. That's good. Maybe next time Michael can sit at that table at the next RT celebration with Stein and
looking forward
Flynn.
To it.
Yeah, it's a good gig, I hear, if you can get it.
So
you can.
And we should just remind people that this week we found out that the number of drone strikes in Yemen are already supersede, I think, what they were annually last year in the past 2 months, that
right.
The constraints that the Obama administration had put in, and admittedly very late in their administration, relatively speaking, have basically been pulled off. And we now have 2,000 U.S. military personnel ranging from Marines primarily, but also Rangers, about 500 special ops, on the ground in Syria and more heading to the region. So,
right. The problem with that thinking always was when you elect somebody who's completely amoral and really has no sort of doesn't understand the whole concept of having compassion for others, what civilians get killed or, whatever problems people had with drones under President Obama, you know, they at least attempted to not kill civilians. And I'm not going to get into that whole debate right now over that. But the point is here is Trump doesn't care.
Well, I mean, they explicitly said we're pulling off the restrictions that had such high requirements to protect civilians. And of course, civilians are always going to die when you're involved in war and or kinetic activity, as we call it. And so I don't know if there's a moral distinction. But if you make a moral distinction between more civilians dying than less, it's an issue. And we should also say it's not just a question of Donald Trump. Anybody who did not realize that a person who gets elected by Republicans would be doing what Republicans want is a fool and, has a notion of politics like, that Bullworth is real,
Exactly. He's just going to go and he's going to be different. Why? I mean, if you know anything, again,
because in Donald Trump's heart of hearts, he actually feels badly for, strongly about a different, a whole set of different ideologies. All right, but let's not get caught up in this. Let's go directly to talking about the budget. And basically, it's a pretty straightforward budget. Everything gets cuts except for defense and homeland securities and homeland security. Veteran Affairs and Transportation. And I got to break. I've yet to see a breakout of exactly why transportation increases. But I'm
sure there's got to be something to do with somebody's benefiting.
Well, yes.
Trump knows.
Right, exactly.
Question is only who. But that's the thing. And for once, it seems like I'm actually impressed. It seems to have happened organically, although maybe there were plans on listservs or, email lists that I didn't see. But it seems like everybody, the people who are complaining about this, and that goes well beyond people who are just on the left to almost anybody with common sense, have really sort of focused in on, the whole Meals on Wheels part of it. Because that, to me, is such an easy part of it, which is it's a metaphor for Trump, and also it's sort of the best example of what they're doing, which is you can keep paying for me, you can increase defense and you can keep paying for me to go on vacation every weekend and for my wife to live in a different city. Millions upon millions really gets towards billions of dollars over the term. But we cannot, elderly people who cannot feed themselves, we're going to let starve. I mean, I don't think there's any better kind of sort of looking at who these people really are.
Oh, yeah, this is, it's stunning. I mean, it really is. It is. Well, let's listen to this audio. We have this audio clip here. And, this transportation thing, as I look at it, too, I think it may not even be the case because the transportation department is cut. But let's listen to first Mulvaney. This clip encompasses both cuts to the ultimately what is a Meals on Wheels and also to food programs for children after school. Although he sort of brings it into that. So let's hear this clip and we'll stop. Here's Mick Mulvaney, the Office of Budget Management. People should also know that he was one of the co-chairs and founders, I think, of the Freedom Caucus.
And urban development and the community development block grants aren't exclusively about housing. They support a variety of different programs, including, in part, Meals on Wheels that affects a lot of Americans. In Austin, Texas today, one organization there that delivers those meals to thousands of elderly says that those citizens will no longer be able to be provided those meals in those communities. So what do you say to those Americans who are ultimately losing out, not on housing, but on other things that are taken out
of the budget? And as you know, I think you know, that Meals on Wheels is not a federal program. It's part of that community, that CDBGs, the block grants that we give to the states. And what many states make the decision to use that money on Meals on Wheels. Here's what I can tell you about CDBGs, because that's what we fund, right? Is that we spent $150 billion on those programs since the 1970s. The CDBGs have been identified as programs since, I believe, the second Bush administration, as ones that were just not showing any results. That we can't do that anymore. We can't spend money on programs just because they sound good and great. Meals on Wheels sounds great. Again, that's a state decision to fund that particular portion. But to take the federal money and give it to the states and say, look, we want to give you money for programs that don't work. I can't defend that anymore. We cannot defend that anymore. We're $20 trillion in debt. We're going to spend money. We're going to spend a lot of money, but we're not going to spend it on programs that...
Now, if you could look at the look on the face of the reporter who asked that question, NBC News, Peter Alexander, he just can't believe his ears that this guy is talking about the Meals on Wheels program in terms of it providing results. And just,
you know, there is a, I mean, he makes a good point there, because if you noticed with that program, if you're old and you eat, you just get hungry again the next day.
It's true. It's true.
So how can they show any results from that? I mean, and then they're hungry again the next day.
And,
I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
And not to mention, these people eventually die. And so the food doesn't stop anything.
The food does not create immortality. Clearly the program's failing.
But, you know,
not results.
I mean, I tweeted something like this yesterday, and we were talking about this this morning. This is like this could literally be like a psychology test, right? Like, this is one of those things, like, should, you know, or one of those questions they ask on a form, you know, before you hire someone. Would you cut Meals on Wheels even if it didn't have any demonstrable results for people? And just to be clear, we should remind people what it is. It is a program that is, depending on where you are in the country, ranging from like Atlanta, their Meals on Wheels relies on like 50% government grants, whereas like San Diego, maybe only 2% government grants, where they collect food and on a daily basis deliver it to elderly people who are mostly immobile. And so
we're housebound.
Housebound. And, you know, I'll go into later in the program, I'll go into some of the benefits, because the benefits are actually even greater than you would imagine, beyond like, hey, feeding people and hey, checking in on elderly people.
Of itself.
Right. Exactly.
Dying of starvation. But okay.
Exactly.
We need more results than that.
Right. Well, but I mean, just how much of a bubble has this guy lived in as a conservative in this country? I mean, you know, because and people accuse me of living in a liberal bubble. I certainly do. But I do have a sense of, like, it, you know, I don't know, my liberal ideas that I wouldn't say them in certain areas. Maybe I would hold back from being fully straightforward about my ideas about a full government takeover of all industry. I wouldn't come out and blurt that out necessarily to the entire country, because they may look at me like, wow, that's pretty heavy. This guy has no sense that he can get up there in front of the American public and say, like, just not seeing the results of feeding old people.
Just not getting it.
We're just, you know, the cost curve. We're not bending it.
I mean, how do you...
I don't know. I mean, again, like, they've gotten to that sort of ultimate point, although I feel like we keep saying that, and they push it further. But I don't know. I mean, it's pretty hard to get much further along the sort of the line here in terms of showing just an absolute disregard for human beings. And still, of course, arguing you're pro-life and all this kind of stupid stuff. I mean, this is like, you know, this is the Ron Paul 2012 debate performance when he talked about leaving somebody in the road to die if they didn't have health insurance, because that was freedom. I mean, that's what this is. This, they basically want to turn, you know, this is what you do and how you turn us into a developing country. You leave people to starve and die on the roadside. Don't worry, you won't notice them, by the way. I mean, I do. I think this is like when you're talking about certain tests, psychological tests, it's like the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Right.
Or it's like the, you know, the authoritarian one where whether you'd give the electric shock. Where was it? On Yale?
The Milgram experiments, yes.
That's what this is. It's like, will you let somebody who's poor die?
Okay.
Because that's what will happen here. A lot of people will actually die.
I just let. They're actually actively making it happen.
Let's now look. And, you know, that's true. The health care. And to be fair to them, the health care bill that they're proposing will ultimately lead to more deaths than maybe this. So to be fair.
Let's be when fair it comes, and they're killing people. Yeah, that's true.
But let's go now. Mick Mulvaney goes on. So after Mick Mulvaney has said that we're just not seeing the results for Meals on Wheels. And so, you know, he goes on to talk about what he's also not seeing the results. Never mind feeding old people, but we're not seeing the results when we feed young people.
We're going to spend money. We're going to spend a lot of money, but we're not going to spend it on programs that cannot show that they actually deliver the promises that we've made to people.
So you talk about programs that do work or don't work. There's a program called The Shine that's in Pennsylvania, rural counties of Pennsylvania, that provides after-school educational programs for individuals in those areas, which just so happens to be the state that helped propel President Trump to the White House. I'm curious what you say to those Americans in a community where they tell me today that 800 individuals will no longer, children who need it most, will no longer be provided in those most needy of communities the educational care they need.
I'm not familiar. Y'all are at an advantage over me because I have to memorize all 4,000 line items. But so let's talk about after-school programs generally. They're supposed to be educational programs, right? And that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to help kids who don't get fed at home get fed so they do better in school. Guess what? There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually doing that. There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually helping results, helping kids do better in school, which is what, when we took your money from you to say, look, we're going to go spend on an after-school program, the way we justified it was, these programs are going to help these kids do better in school and get better jobs.
Now,
look, these little bastards can still do well in school, even if they're starving.
No, but here's the thing, is that, first off, the guy, the reporter, who is literally has a look of horror on his face. I mean, he can't believe this, that he's actually like, he's bringing up an after-school program. Mulvaney doesn't know about the after-school program, so he immediately pivots to cutting food subsidies for kids. So, A, the after-school program, it's the results are obvious. It allows parents to leave their kids at school and know that they are protected so they don't have to pay for babysitting or they don't have to come home from work or kids don't have to just wander around alone. Seems to me to be rather obvious. But the idea that there's
no... Are you sure? Do you have the numbers on that? Do you have the results?
Well, but here's the thing.
I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
Well, I mean, that to me seems obvious. But this guy is trying to make the argument that we do not see demonstrable impact from feeding children in terms of their ability to get jobs later in life and to do well in school. And let's just for the moment stipulate, pretend that there is no such data that shows that. Let's just pretend that there is no way to know if you feed kids who are hungry and don't have other means to get food, whether or not that's a good thing.
But here's the thing, Sam. I have to believe there is a strong statistical correlation between being alive and getting a job. So I'd have to think that there'd be a chart we could look at and say, well, these kids ate food, which allowed nourishment so they didn't die. Hey, they're more likely to get a job if they're alive.
Cliff, you know what? Classic liberal, okay? There's a difference between being dead and just malnourished and severely malnourished.
Good point. Sorry.
But this is sick stuff, and it's sick that the guy is up there making this argument. Like, it's, you know, it's one thing to
and
say,
feels
like,
comfortable doing it, right? I mean, he's like, yeah, well, you know, almost, he doesn't know his audience, because to him, the audience he's always surrounded himself with clearly thinks that this stuff is completely normal.
It's, and you know, he's not even attempting to say, like, there are other agencies that will step in and fill this more efficiently. He's not even making that argument. He's just saying that, like, you know, unless we see some type of, dollar return on investment for feeding our people in this country, we shouldn't do it.
I mean, that's right. The argument, right? I mean, this is...
That is. I mean, unless there need to be, in his jargon, results, I can only assume he means that they'd better be putting something back into the economy. And if we don't know that they're doing that, then the whole program's worthless. That's what it seems to be.
And let me make clear that there are, in fact, an incredible amount of studies that show from the CDC that kids who suffer from malnutrition do poorly in school, that kids do better when they get fed. But, I mean, why do you even have to make that argument? Why do you even have to make that argument?
I don't even know why you have to even find evidence of that. You know what I mean? I mean, I get it that there are many things that are not as clear-cut that we want evidence for in programs we pay for. Totally fine. That makes sense to me. Making sure kids aren't starving, I don't really, you know, and it's nice the CDC has those studies, but I think it's kind of straightforward that if you're starving, you're really not paying attention to much else. It is one of those basic human drives.
Well, and what was it that Paul Ryan said about the empty stomach, strong? What was that? Did he say that out loud?
Yeah, I can look for that, but it's basically full stomachs, empty souls.
Yeah, I mean...
Somebody's talking, saying if you have a full stomach, you have an empty soul?
If you
didn't earn that full stomach.
He wasn't specifically talking about... he was talking about a full stomach in a metaphorical sense, but, you know.
No, but actually, do you remember a couple years ago
we played
the clip? Exactly.
He had that whole story about the brown bag lunch, and he had heard the story from another official from Wisconsin, and it was a story about a young black male who came into school, and somebody asked him, what would you rather, a brown bag lunch or a free lunch at school? And the kid said, I would rather a brown bag lunch because that means there's somebody at home that loves me.
And we realized that I dropped in the famous delirious Eddie Murphy ice cream sketch because that was the essence of what he was saying.
Right.
You ain't got now, no ice cream because you're on the welfare. Your parents don't love you.
And it turns out...
Your father's an alcoholic.
And he can't afford it.
It turns out that he botched the anecdote. And it also turns out that the anecdote, as originally delivered, was actually just a fabrication. And so, and then...
Shocking. I always thought there really was a welfare mom somewhere who had like 40 kids just so she could get more money. Turns out that wasn't true. Shocking.
It's not a great business model, it turns out.
They just make things up.
It's not a great business model because of menopause. Once we get past menopause... Then it would be a great long-term business plan.
Kidnapping kids, but claiming they're yours.
Here's Paul Ryan at CPAC in 2014, basically arguing, look, we need to build moral character through our budgetary process.
What they're offering people is a full stomach and an empty soul. The American people want more than that. You know, this reminds me of a story.
Oh, wait, this is the story.
What they're offering people is a full stomach and an empty soul. The American people want more than that. You know, this reminds me of a story I heard from Eloise Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
She serves in the cabinet of my buddy, Governor Scott Walker. She once met a young boy from a very poor family. And every day at school, he would get a free lunch from a government program. He told Eloise he didn't want a free lunch. He wanted his own lunch, one in a brown paper bag, just like the other kids. He wanted one, he said, because he knew a kid with a brown paper bag had someone who cared for him. This is what the left does not understand.
Okay, so just to give you the backdrop on that story, I just looked it up. The first thing we did, this is the Washington Post, we looked for Eloise Anderson in stories about brown paper bags. We discovered a congressional hearing held in 2013, chaired by Ryan, that focused on the war on poverty. Ryan asked Anderson, who appeared as an expert witness, what would be done to make the food stamp program, also as SNAP, work better.
And she said, my thought who's always been around SNAP program is that, why do you have this program, school breakfast? When do we start asking parents to be responsible for their children? You know, a little boy told me once that what was important to him is that he didn't want school lunch. He wanted a brown bag. It was a brown bag. He brought his lunch, and it meant his mom cared about him. Just think what we've done. If this kid tells me a brown bag was more important than a free lunch, we've missed the whole notion of parents being there for their children. So Anderson had testified about this, and but the story doesn't end there. Wonkette wondered if Anderson's story was actually derived from a 2011 book titled The Invisible Thread by Laura Schroff, which is about a busy executive and her relationship with an 11-year-old homeless panhandler named Maurice. His mother was a drug addict in jail. At one point, Schroff offers to bring the kid lunch every day so he won't go hungry. And then the exchange goes like this. Maurice looks at me and asks a question. If you make me lunch, will you put it in a brown paper bag? And the writer says, I didn't understand the question. Do you want it in a brown paper bag or how would you prefer it? And she goes, Miss Laura, I don't want your money. I want my lunch in a brown paper bag. Okay, sure, but why do you want it in a bag? Because when I see kids come to school with their brown paper bag, it means someone cares about them. Miss Laura, can I have my lunch in a brown paper bag? And it turns out
the book.
And it turns out Anderson misspoke at the testimony, and she said what she intended to say was the following. Once I heard someone say what was important to them, and she had never heard of it. And she was referring to a television
interview.
I can
disprove this whole thing right away. Because when I was a kid, you know, teenager especially, if I had a brown paper bag, it meant that I'd gone to the deli on 14th Street and First Avenue in Manhattan, because that was the one that would sell booze to you. If you were underage,
your mama don't love you.
But they didn't ask for any kind of ID, but they made me put it in a brown paper bag. So usually it meant I was drinking a 40. Not that my parents loved me. See, so I've already proven this story is complete bullshit.
But it's unbelievable that they have based this sort of bizarre fairy tale. I mean, it's what it is. It's literally based on fiction that has been injected into the conservative bloodstream and then comes out on the other end where we should deny kids food at their schools. It's just insane.
I mean, you know, this is such a great example, though, because that's the thing is what conservatism has become so far beyond just this story. It's all about anecdotes that you get from people that sort of that serve your purpose, and you know the overall issues, be they global warming, supply side economics, and on and on and on. Science proves again and again that they have no basis. In fact, the right wing belief on any of these issues, denying global warming and the rest, that supply side economics ever works. They've been disproven again and again when they try their crazy right wing stuff. Sam Brownback, great example in Kansas, or Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana. So they find they have to find, and that's where I kind of brought up the welfare queen earlier, which is famous Reagan one. They need to find these bullshit anecdotes they can throw out there, because they can't say 47% of whatever, you know, do this or what, because there are no facts to back them up. And so this is what the stuff I've done on guns, you get it for years. You can point out the percentage of people, you know, with a gun in their home and how much more dangerous it is for their kids and them. And then the way the right will come back, you'd be like, well, my brother, Bobby Ann Sue, once was sitting in his home and somebody broke in and he had a gun there and he shot him dead. So it works. And that's their response.
Right. Turned out it was
some
his
anecdote
son.
That's probably not true. Yeah. What'd you say?
Turned out it was grandma, and
turned
she
out it was grandma,
visit,
but point still stands.
Exactly. Right. Had she been a criminal,
either completely
she would have been
up, right? Or there's something that's sort of half fake about it. You know, it all ends up being like videos put together by that worm. You know,
right.
Project Veritas.
Right. Exactly.
It's
Ben Carson
thing.
With a belt buckle.
Out of context right. or made up, because there are no figures, there are no facts that back up virtually anything these people say. So it's all by anecdote. And usually the anecdotes are made up, too.
Well, I was going to interject before you put up the Paul Ryan clip from CPAC, which it's kind of been injected into the conversation. But, I mean, when Sam, earlier when you were banging your fists about how you can't understand how he could stand up there and say this, I mean, it's about race is what it is. The reason he can stand up there and say that in front of all of these people is because he has the backing of the Conservative Party when he's pretty much saying that to them that they, and they think this, it's not true, that they're feeding Black and Hispanic kids.
Without
a doubt. And that's the only reason that it doesn't sound immoral to them to, it doesn't sound wrong to them.
Of course.
To take away the money.
Of course it doesn't sound wrong to them. But the thing that I think is, I think that's demented. And then I think what's an additional supplementary dementia is that they're not aware of how they sound to normal people.
I don't think they care. Clearly, they don't care. This administration has demonstrated perfectly
well. You've also given me
the
perfect segue here, Sam, if I can read that quote I was saying to you before.
Yes.
Because this is not how normal people think, especially where these guys. So a reporter, healthcare reporter for Politico Pro, Adam Cancren, tweeted this out. House Speaker Paul Ryan to Rich Lowry, you may know of National Review and Fox News and getting stardust, you know, in his eyes when he saw Sarah Palin, uncapping Medicaid funding. This is what he said, quote, "We've been dreaming of this since you and I were drinking out of a keg," unquote. Seriously. Man. That's what these guys were thinking about when they were 18 and 19 in school, which was, how can we deprive elderly people and poor people of their health care and food?
And, you know, while he was drinking out of the keg, you know how he got there, right? It was the Social Security survivor benefits paying
for him because his dad passed away. Yes. That's what makes it even more sick, quite frankly. But it's almost, I mean, you know how we've talked about sometimes, I really wonder at some point with Paul Ryan, you know, and you'd need to lie him on a couch somewhere with a psychiatrist.
Yes.
But, you know, we've often talked about, you know, the Larry Craig type Republicans who stand up in favor of anti-gay amendments because they loathe themselves.
Yes.
I wonder if there's not some of that going on here with Paul Ryan.
I think if you're in college because of Social Security survivor benefits, and you're dreaming as you drink at the keg of cutting these type of social insurance programs, then I think it's talking about a deep-seated shame that you have that you must project outward. And instead of saying,
right,
I'm not taking the money, it's I'm going to cut this someday.
Right. But and that's the shame of it. And again, I think way back when Max Blumenthal wrote a book about this and some other people have done it, I honestly think that's a lot of the basis of modern conservatism. When you say it's about resentment, it's about hate, it's deeper than that. It's self-loathing from a lot of these people. And instead of getting them the help they need, they become leaders of the Republican Party and work out their issues by hurting the rest of us.
It's almost impossible to sort of come up with another answer. Because
I think it really is, because there is a traditional conservatism, you know, of a more Rockefeller republicanism, where there is a strong belief that budgets needed to be balanced. Now, sometimes that meant people didn't get services, but you don't see at least as much in that Republican Party of 30, 40 years ago, people sitting there openly sort of hoping to starve poor people. It was, they believed you had to balance the budget, you had to live within your means. You can disagree with that, and I'm sure there always were a couple Jesse Helmses hanging around there and Strom Thurmonds, but a lot of the mentality of it was just that we shouldn't live beyond our means, and it wasn't, you know, whereas now it's not about that. It's about abjectly punishing certain people. You can tell that by the fact that there are certain social programs that go to the right people that they're fine with. It's not about balancing a budget. If it were, you wouldn't be giving these huge tax cuts to rich people.
Well, that's the thing. These are tax cuts for rich people. 9%, 10% increase in Defense Department, 7-8% increase in Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
The Department of Veterans. I mean, I can understand that.
The Republicans that I'm talking about from back then would cut defense and would raise taxes on rich people. Like George H.W. Bush did in 1990, for example,
right.
And he's probably the last of it, because they wanted to balance the budget. They believed you needed to do that. Again, you can disagree with that and say that's not the most important thing, but there is at least an ideology there. It wasn't based upon just hating other people because you hate yourself. It now has become almost the whole raison d'etre behind their party is a psychological disorder.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it.
I mean, I think you're right about that. Let me just talk about one other thing that's being cut.
that I've seen Tom Perez out and about talking about is the Manufacturing Extension Partnership. Okay, it is not a huge line item in the I think it's the Labor Department's budget, but it was launched under the Reagan administration in 1988. It received $143 million this year from Commerce Department. That's 43 cents per taxpayer. The program estimated its impact in a report this year. For every $1 of federal investment, and you have a similar dynamic, I should say, with things like the IRS, right? I mean, these are obvious things which belie the notion that this is about, like you're saying, about the budget and returns. In fact, the IRS is even more direct, right? Because you spend money to actually literally make money for the government.
Right.
But in this instance, the program estimated its impact in a report this year. For every $1 of federal investment, the MEP, the Manufacturing Extension Partnership, national network, generates $17.90 in new sales growth for manufacturers. For every $1,501 of federal investment, MEP creates or retains one manufacturing job, which is, I mean, obviously that manufacturing job necessarily is going to pay you back more in taxes just on FICA taxes.
Right.
Denny Dotson, the chairman of Dotson Iron Castings in Minooka, Minnesota, said his company probably would have died without the program's help. 12 years ago, his firm needed to adapt to avoid layoffs. The MEP stepped in, showed how the business how to reduce waste in the process. 5 years later, it was wrapping up orders in 8 days. As productivity improved, so did business. They hired 25 more machinery workers. I mean, this comes in and basically provides subsidies for these small businesses and then creates jobs after. Like basically subsidizes the hiring of other people. And after a certain period of time, they basically stop the subsidies. And hopefully the company has been able to turn around and adopted. And, you know, cutting stuff like this and all of this, we should also remind people, when you talk about all this discretionary cuts, there's only like 25% of the budget is within this discretionary budget anyways. So this is not where, if they're going to cut, where they're going to get any substantial savings. But they know there is not as strong of a concerted lobby that will fight for these individual things, right? Meals on Wheels does not have the lobbying budget to go in and press against.
Not quite AIPAC, for example.
Right, exactly.
No, and that's exactly right. And the thing is, if your interest is, again, if you're a real sort of what traditionally a fiscal conservative, not what that's come to mean now, which is just cutting taxes on rich people, which is that's not being fiscally conservative. If you're someone who wanted to balance the budget, what we were talking about back then you'd also, for example, look at healthcare and you'd look at Obamacare. You'd say, well, getting people to go in and have preventative exams is much better than treating them when they end up in the emergency room, because you really have two choices here. You can become Ron Paul in Mulvaney's America and leave people lying on the roads to die. Or if you're going to be what I would call a civilized nation and say that people show up in the emergency room, you're not going to refuse to treat them as if when the fire department showing up and saying, hey, have you paid yet? Sorry, we're not going to put the fire out. If that's what you're going to do, then it is much cheaper, every study forever shows, to put that money into prevention and to get people so they go in and they don't show up when they're in terrible shape and it costs a lot more money. So even if you're not compassionate in a way that you care about people, if you cared about actually balancing the budget or spending less money, you would do that. But that's not what this is about. Again, it's the wrong people asking for money from the government, and we need to punish those people because somewhere deep-seated, I hate myself.
They're fighting against big, hungry seniors. You don't want to you got to fight against that huge lobby, that industry.
You let those guys go. Who knows what's next?
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Cliffy, I'm sure we'll be talking more about this budget as it winds its way through Congress, and we'll have more time to talk about the health care bill, I have a feeling, next Friday.
The only shame of today, and hopefully you guys will get to it at some point, is we didn't get a chance to talk about North Korea, because
Yes.
That's some serious.
I wouldn't worry about that.
But nobody can do first strike.
Yeah.
All right.
What are you gonna
do? All right.
Talk
yeah,
to
exactly.
You.
What are they going to do? They just said if a bullet from us happens to enter their territory, they're going to immediately launch nukes at all of our bases in South Korea. You know, it's not really a big deal.
I don't have much to say, but drill and nuke North Korea.
There you go. That sounds good. That's all.
Want to fire all of my staff? I don't care. I'm not taking the press of the plane with me, anyways.
All right.
Awesome, that guy. Okay, yeah, I know you got to go. Thanks we'll for having me on as always.
Bye bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We're going to get film guy Matthew on the phone. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake thing?
I'm sorry, man. I'll send it
to you. Do it afterwards? Okay. I'm sure film guy Matthew would love to hear that anyways.
Well, give it a second.
Well, that's all right. All right, well, why don't you...
I don't know if we have time, but it is
give me
sent.
Some music.
Yeah, get him on the phone. We can play it for him.
Time to see you in the world. You always step to my girl. Like Angle Wat, Mechanicsburg, Anchorage, and Dar es Salaam. We'll own New York with champagne and disco.
Oh, okay. We're back. Let's listen to Jimmy Reefer Cake's song of the week. And what is it called?
What I Got.
What I Got. That's like a Beck, right? Wasn't that the Beck? Sublime? Oh, all right.
Early in the morning, rise to take a shit. Reading on my iPhone about the latest hypocrite. They say Russia is the reason things went wrong. But is Russia also the reason why my money's all gone? House market inflation, no prices got so high. And when it crashed, they bailed out the banks. I should have started a motherfucking riot then. Well, our president sucks, but that's the one you got. I'ma keep on fighting to legalize pot. Don't mean no static, just gets it off my chest. Never had to battle with no Democrat socialist. Take a small example, take a tip from me. Yeah, take all your money, use it all to grow weed. Reef is what I got, it's within my reach. And the reefer cake style, still straight from OOP. Reefer comes back to you, you'll get what you deserve. Try and test this bud, you're about to get served. Reef is what I got, and I smoke a whole lot. Yeah, you'll feel it when the dance gets hot. Reefer is what I got. Just remember that. I say a reefer is what I got. I got to remember that. That's why I don't cry when the Democrats run away. I don't get angry at the bills I have to pay. I don't get angry when my mom smokes pot. Hits the bottle, goes right to the rock. Fucking and fighting, it's all the same. Living with medicinal is the only way to stay sane. Let the loving, let the loving come back to me. Just remember, reefer is what I got, I got. Just remember that now. Reefer is what I got, I got, I got, I got, I got.
It really makes you think.
There you go. Jimmy Reefer Cake. I'm still stuck on the first line of the song. I never got past that.
Absolutely nauseating.
The idea of contemplating Jimmy Reefer Cake heading to the bathroom. Everything after that just was sounding...
You guys talk about poop all the time.
Well, I don't mind thinking about myself
sure
going to the bathroom,
oh,
but I don't want to talk about...
We all love it.
Exactly. Some narcissism there. Healthy narcissism.
Well,
you should only feel comfortable.
Okay.
No, I agree.
I mean,
Sam is...
Ladies and gentlemen,
Jimmy Reefer Cake, of course, not only from all the hypocrisy, writes in a weekly song, but he also does many of the musical ditties to introduce some of our regulars. However, he didn't do this one. Matthew Film Guy. Hello,
hey, Sam,
Matthew.
How you doing?
I am doing well. I am so excited to have you on this week, Matthew, and I'll tell you why. Because I have actually watched something that you have suggested.
Holy, oh my God, Shofar is all around.
Yeah. Let's not get too carried away. And I'm enjoying it. It's a television program, and I'm enjoying it. It's not quite Battlestar Galactica.
Sure, but what is, really?
But yeah, exactly, what is. But I'm almost all the way through the first season of The Expanse.
Nice, very nice. I've been enjoying it very much myself.
All right, well, great. It was great talking
to
you.
That was electrifying radio.
Thank you so much showing up.
Did I put all my eggs in the Expanse basket? No, I feel like somebody else really sold that one to you. I wouldn't put that on an A-list. It's definitely great sci-fi, but, you know, is it A-list?
No, it's not A-list. It's not, it's far afield
from
Battlestar Galactica.
Which one of you just got cucked? I don't understand.
Maybe it was a mutual cucking.
Is The Expanse based on something? Is it based
on a movie? It was a book.
So, Matthew, Film Guy, what have you been doing? Have you noticed, has the era of Trump in any way inhibited your eBaying? Has it enhanced it? Has it, give us an update.
I feel like it's definitely inhibited it. I think people feel very much more tight with their money right now, and it's shocking to me that they have less money to spend on the worthless stuff that I find around my house and my mother's garage. I mean, it is just shocking to the extent that this stuff has not been flying off the shelves, shelf being a box in the bottom of my closet at home.
But isn't it possible that you've hit the bottom of the barrel and the quality of your stuff is not good anymore?
It's true that there may be something to the inventory itself, but you know what? I find that I'm playing the long game with this stuff because my philosophy with eBay is it only takes one guy somewhere around the world one time to need that one thing for it to sell. So I put it up there. eBay and I have a great relationship. They let me list for free now. It takes time. And maybe not everybody is interested in a slightly used black yoga blanket, 100% cotton, no fringe. Shipping costs $12.99.
Hey, Matthew, do you remember the one that I helped you put together?
No, which one was that?
You don't remember? It was literally like the cover to a Game of Thrones box set. And I had to write, the specific request was not based on actual history, because old Matt had explained to us.
Some people were afraid that it might be too historical for their taste.
Old Matt explained to us that the reason he couldn't get it to Game of Thrones is he didn't really like long historic narrative fiction.
He didn't like historical dramas. You know, actually, what I'm really now banking on is the Sam Cedar annoyance factor. Whereas I'm selling one copy of the People versus RNC 2004 documentary that I edited for you and Janine when you did the Majority Report on Air America.
Uh-huh.
I have one copy that is the only copy that will come from Matthew Film Guy should somebody wish to buy it and therefore annoy you, because I believe you have at least a dozen copies on the shelf at home.
I don't have many of those left at all.
Going fast, folks.
Yeah. In fact, I should probably digitize that, get around to digitizing that.
I thought you did. I have it digitized.
Yeah,
if someone buys this, I will send you the digitized version. Also, I have the self-distributed version of Who's the Caboose, not to be confused with the slick yellow version that was later put out. I have the one that I did the cover art
for. Yeah, that I don't appreciate you selling, because that undercuts me. Yeah. I got to get rid of those. Yeah. I still have like
I'll see you in court.
I still have a closet full of those
things. Every couple of months, like, Sam has a new scheme where he thinks he's going to unload those. It's like, it's finally going to happen, Nikki.
That's right.
Those, they're going to be flying like high. I'm going to go on marriage, see?
I just,
and then it all pays off.
I just read somewhere that DVDs are a great insulation.
Sam, I'm thinking you're doing that live majority report, right, at the Bell House coming up. I think you should pass those out. You should, like, throw them into the crowd.
Maybe. Maybe that's not a bad idea.
They all come to the Bell House, and then all the returns are made, Alice.
It's funny that you mentioned the live show at the Bell House, because I was going to try to pitch to you directly that we should do like a video component of your live video of your live show.
That was a good idea. Didn't I write back that?
No, you didn't. So I'm bringing it up now on air live in front of everybody.
Well, let's just tell people what we're talking about. On April 8th at 1 p.m. At the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York, we are doing a live majority report. Janine Garofalo, Matt Taibbi will be guests. It'll only be an hour long, and we're going to do it in front of a live audience. There are still tickets left, but not many. I think probably, in the 20s? We don't have many tickets left. So,
yeah, 30s or 20.
Yes. We are down to almost 10% remain, and we're still about, three or four weeks out. So people should pick up those tickets if they want to come. So you're thinking about doing a video behind the scenes. I mean, if you think it would be compelling, I'm not sure that it would. I mean,
you remember how great the one I did for Marin at his one of his early live at the Bell House shows was?
I enjoyed that thoroughly, but he's far more neurotic about these things, and he's not on video every day. But
this is like you in your element. It's something. It's like a concert film. I think this is something nice for people who couldn't be there to really feel like they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And, we could put it together relatively inexpensively, I'm sure. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Plus, you're back with Janine. Everyone loves when you and Janine are together. You know, saying that you're not the main draw, but there's some star power there. Taibbi, that's another sort of a well-known name.
Yeah, all right. Well,
I think I'm good at these things, you know, following people around, chopping it up into something compelling.
Very good at following people.
And making it compelling. You got the whole thing.
No, of course. All right. Well, I will take it under advisement. What else have you been doing? Obviously not that much.
No, obviously not that much, because I'm relying on you to hire me to do something right now.
I was going
to
say, time. Are you finding
that? You know what's good about these slow times is that you really get to work on things that you love, things that you enjoy, things that aren't just to pay the rent, but to kind of keep you interested in remaining alive.
What are you doing? What are you working on?
Well, I am currently in the throes of a personal documentary, which I know you've heard me talk about before, based on the copious amounts of, maybe even longer, actually. But it's funny, though, I've just gotten to the point where I'm digitizing some footage that I took in your apartment as part of a video letter series that I did with a filmmaker named Kaveh Zahedi. Now, I think you've heard me recommend his show about the show, which is on Brick TV. It's also on YouTube. And in fact, it's having a feature film version premiering tonight at the Metrograph in New York City. He and I did for a while a video correspondence that we were going to edit into something, and he later incorporated it into his box set. But one of the chapters, which I had forgotten about, was you talking to me, you and Benjamin, and I think... what's his name from The Onion? Todd, we did that whole not smoking video, if you recall, this infamous video.
No. Todd Hansen. You're talking
Todd
about
Hansen.
Todd Hansen from The
Todd
Onion.
Hansen, yeah.
John Benjamin from Majority Report voice fame, and also, I guess, Bob's Burgers and Archer, if you're into that type of thing.
Right, I'm not.
I have no recollection of what you're talking about.
Yeah, I didn't either. So it's like an interview, a little short little interview with you. It's like, here's who's Sam, who's John, and who's Todd. And then we go on. This was the same time that we did that Stop Smoking video where I really disgustingly simulated fellatio on Todd's toe to get somebody to stop smoking. Do you remember this video?
Right. Yeah, I do remember that video.
Does that video exist? Because
that was a Benjamin production.
Uh-huh. I'll have to get in contact with him.
Did that.
It was in your house.
The one in Manhattan? The what one
that that's right,
shot
that's
Bad
right
Situation is in?
That the very same.
Okay.
This is like
Sam
2003
just wasn't
or 2.
You and Benjamin did this.
That's the way it was. It was like the factory back in those days.
Sam was observing. Sam was observing. He liked to watch back then.
I always liked to watch that. That was always. I remember the concept now where it was like somebody couldn't quit sucking toes or something like that.
I think it was something like, this is just as disgusting a habit as smoking.
Right.
So you wouldn't want to do this. And, you know, I made it as disgusting as I could. I was actually shocked at how disgusting it was. But
so you were the guy licking Todd Hansen's toes.
That's right. That's right. I was. I think I proved myself a capable actor in that position. Mm-hmm. I'm slowly going through. I have about 400 hours worth of footage. So I'm slowly going through all of that. In between teaching my classes, you know, I'm teaching editing at Sacred Heart, and I'm teaching film to the senior citizens at the JCC.
Now, do you only teach at religious-based institutions?
Only religious-based. I'm tired
Sacred
of
Heart
education.
And the Jew,
right.
The JCC annex. Okay.
Yeah, I've been trying to get in at a mosque, but so far nothing. I've shown some Buddhist films, but they're not interested.
Give me a sense. Why don't you recommend a film? I mean, let's not.
Can I just say something real quick? I have another story. I have another story that I want to bring to your attention.
Mm-hmm.
In my film world, one of the earliest connections I had was through my uncle, who had written songs and had written some treatments and screenplays and has made some money in L.A. over the years. But for the past about 15, 20 years, he's been a script reader doing coverage for an entertainment lawyer who has produced some films. I think one of the biggest hits that they did was Inside Man, the Denzel Washington, Spike Lee movie.
I like that movie a lot.
Yeah. Well, my uncle greenlit, whatever. He passed it along and said, you know, we should do this thing.
Wow.
But
great guy.
He said recently that it just... Okay, so he wrote me this email. This is my uncle, my dad's brother. I just want to tell you what he wrote here. He said, in 2006, Alan, that's the lawyer, gave me a 10-page storyline, which a number of people had already read, with some writing copy indicating that they thought it might be nothing more than a joke. But Alan didn't tell me any of that. When he gave it to me and asked for my opinion, I read most of it until I personally called Alan and told him it was, up until then, the most ridiculous thing I had ever read. Not only was it not written well, but it wasn't even close to commercial. I remember telling Alan that he should stay away from it and that it was blatantly in-your-face, racist, right-wing bullshit. And it was entitled The Islamic States of America.
And this was,
and he only recently realized who had wrote it.
Bannon.
Yeah, it was Steve Bannon. Can you believe that?
Jesus.
So this is, I was talking to my uncle about that theory that his whole thing, like him and a couple of the other members of that cabal were like, you know, burned liberals. They couldn't get accepted in Hollywood. They tried their best, and then they sort of completely turned their back on it and wanted to burn it all down to the ground.
Well, that's certainly Breitbart. That was always my estimation of Breitbart.
Well, I think it holds true for Bannon as well. You know, if you look at the things that he tried to do, the way he tried to get involved in the movie business, and of course everyone knows he made money as part of a business deal with Castle Rock, which was all that Seinfeld money and so on.
Right. Total fluke. Right.
But he was a hack. He was trying to get involved with that whole world, and he couldn't make it. And so now it's like, you know, he wants to, like I said, burn it all to the ground. So so I just thought that was a very bizarre and kind of eerie kind of a piece of his past.
I think even Trump has that dynamic to a degree in terms of not feeling
right?
He's accepted by a certain type of society
or culture. Well, that White House correspondence dinner narrative where Obama was making fun of him.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I think that. Stephen Miller.
If you can't beat them, burn them.
Right.
Or if you can't join them, beat them.
Or if you can't host Duck Soup. What was that? Or Talk Soup? What was that old E show? I always pictured like Breitbart, like Breitbart wanting it. That was like the image I had. Like he would want to host some type of really lame like entertainment show like that. And then when never happened, he's like, "All right, I'm going to start a neo-fascist website instead."
Yeah,
there's definitely that quality of being not one of the cool kids and trying to prove to them, Wow, that is creepy. And
so there's evidence that he was out there trying to make it as a screenwriter.
Oh, definitely. Then went on to some documentaries.
Right. Everyone knows that documentaries is the last resort of a failed filmmaker.
Yeah, of course. Oh, sorry about that.
Oh
Matt.
Boy.
No, anyways. all right. Well, Matthew, so what do you recommend that we watch?
Oh, I have another thing to tell you, too. Mary is 100% Italian, and she's so Italian that if you insinuate one more time that she's not Italian, she will cut you.
You've already told him this, haven't you?
What do you mean?
On air, I think.
That she's Italian?
I mean, her name is Mary Barello. I mean, it's not Mary McKenna
yeah,
or whatever.
It sounds familiar that he's...
Barello.
That you keep saying she's Barello. Irish and she's just not.
She's a great fucking broad. Look, everyone knows it. Joey No Socks knows it. She married the fucking fagged film guy, but she's still a great fucking broad.
She got a weird soft spot for Jews, but you know, what can you do? Nobody's perfect.
He wants to watch fucking movies in the village. What are you going to do? But
you
she's
know
a great
fucking
broad.
People don't realize about Massachusetts? You know what the number one ethnicity is in Massachusetts, Michael?
Italians.
It's Italians. Italians, not
go.
Irish.
Forget about it.
Feels
forget
like it.
Forget about it.
You grow
forget
up in Worcester, it feels like it's Irish, but it's Italians. So, whatever. Irish, Italians, both start with I.
both low-class Europeans.
Come on. I mean...
You both got gangs and alcohol abuse, okay?
Right.
Just one of them has better food. Yeah, part Irish, but I'm not going to let that get in the way of some good material.
All right, well, my apologies to Mary, and my apologies to the Irish out there who Mary apparently feels disgusted at being perceived as.
No disgust, just pride in her own ethnicity. That's going around, right? She's just proud of her own background.
All right, so she's an Italian.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, without out of the, what...
That out of the way.
What are you going to... It's going to be The Godfather. Are you going to recommend The Godfather?
Have you ever seen it?
I have seen the Godfather.
Okay. Well, then I'm not going to recommend it.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to recommend another movie somewhat inspired by the horrific proto-fascist milieu that we find ourselves in 2017. Perhaps you've seen this film before, Sam, because you're Jewish.
Shoah?
It's called... Huh?
No, go ahead.
Did you say the Shoah?
Yeah.
You always say that. No, one day I'm going to recommend the Shoah.
Back to the Future 2?
Exactly, Back to the Future 2.
Hey, man.
No, there are some Trump overtones.
Yeah, Biff and Trump, bro.
Totally based on Trump. It's literally based on Trump.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
Okay, so there was a Czechoslovakian film made as part of the Czech New Wave in 1965 entitled The Shop on Main Street.
The Shop on Main Street.
No? Okay. It's the director's name is Jan Kadar, and it's basically the story of a kind of bumbling kind of fool who happens to be the brother-in-law of his town's Aryan overseer. So the town was sort of annexed by the Germans, and certain members of the sort of white class
I am not a communist.
Yes, I was waiting
That's
for
exactly
that.
Right, bro. Now, please, get out of my way.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm leading you there. Just wait. You'll drink. Don't worry. You'll drink. He is put in charge of a Jewish shop. So all the Jews are sort of demoted to just sort of, a peasant class.
Right.
They have yet to be carted off to the camps, but all their businesses now need to be run by Aryans. So his brother-in-law puts him in charge of this old woman's, like, buttons and notions shop.
I just
and
look at it as a vacation. Okay, good.
Huh?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, what was that? I want to enjoy that. What was that?
Nothing. Just please, continue.
Okay. So anyway, it's amazing film because it straddles the line between comedy and tragedy, between a kind of horrific Holocaust sort of precursor and almost like a Charlie Chaplin-esque kind of farce. So it really shows how a town can kind of be consumed by the the power plays that being an Aryan and being in the positive class, the sort of the noble class, versus the way that they don't, you know, even the people who get swept up in it. He's not a party head. He's not a full Nazi, but he kind of goes along with it because it's to his personal sort of benefit. And his wife is so thrilled with all the riches and the money that comes with their position. And, you know, she's kind of like a Lady Macbeth character pushing him to do it. And he's torn because he starts to get to know the old Jewish woman, and starts to know a little bit more of the Jews in the town as things start to ramp up and they start to get them together. And
they get humanized, the Jews.
Exactly. And it's a fantastic film. It's
Dad never made that mistake.
And this probably does feature somebody like Gorka's father, who's, you know, was one of these kinds of overseers that were, you know, not Nazis per se, but were... put in charge by the Nazis.
The old lady was trying to explain Passover to my father, and he headbutted her. Class act.
Yeah. So I highly recommend everybody go out and see it because
my
it's
father
sort of,
was a handsome
it can't happen
man.
Here kind of story. No, please take 3 minutes and just do all the Gorkas. Go ahead.
Jesus.
You know, he's mad about the Gorka because he specifically said, don't Gorka me.
Oh,
I just
see.
Said, don't Gorka me. Don't say it to me. If I can bring it up, you can do it.
He
Allmall says what?
What?
He when I texted him, I said, you want to do the show? He says, all right, but just promise you don't Gorka me. Yeah.
I'm happy to give you your stage.
Oh, go ahead. Recommend European movies and don't get Gorka'd. And then go take a little bath with yourself. Why don't you do that?
What? Why do you? Well, because you knew what movie you were going to suggest, and you knew.
Yeah.
It's just like because it's European.
Hungary, Czechoslovakia. It's all in the same Eastern European stew.
Of course,
the new way.
Let me ask you this: what order do you belong to?
Yeah.
Did you not want to get interrupted, or what's happening with the non? You didn't want it with the Gorka request.
This is one of those times in Matthew
Mary
film
from Hungary.
Why are you picking on Mary? Leave Mary alone.
It's Czechoslovakian.
Oh, this is what Matthew wants us to take his film seriously because they are spiritually and culturally revelatory. Blah, blah, blah.
For me, the Holocaust is just a chance to do some good jokes. I really believe that. But
the Holocaust is a stage.
Well, you should talk to Mary about
to a cheap joke on
her
a podcast.
Countryman Nino Bandinini or whatever in his little
Roberto Benigni. Yeah,
yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Could you talk about that for a second? How did I
Life hope, is Beautiful? No,
Jesus
I won't. I refuse
Christ.
To see that movie. I don't even want to.
I never saw
here.
It.
But yeah,
I
go
did.
Ahead. What do you got?
I mean, I saw that when I was definitely not even in high school yet, and I already had the thing of like. This is like a good movie.
You know what?
This
I
is
found?
A fucking comedy about like a children's game at
Did
a
I show you guys
concentration camp.
I found in like a stack of papers that I had that I must have had hung on the wall when I was living in Cambridge when this came out in like the early 90s, where it was a picture of that I had, you know, because at that time, you know, we didn't really have computers that to do publishing that much at all. I mean, I didn't have a computer that had that type of program. And I had cut out a picture of some camp survivors cheering and taped it onto a paper with Benigni holding
the
Academy
he
Award.
He won an Academy
and,
Award for
and,
that.
And kept like photocopying it. I don't know where I thought I was going to hand it out. I just put it all over my walls.
So I guess, Matthew, is Shop on Main Street really better than that?
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. What you're getting at with Life is Beautiful and like Schindler's List, they cheapen it. You know, it really takes something that's unfathomably horrible and turns it into a feel-good movie of the year that just makes
you're assuming that was true.
I found Schindler's List to be one of the most devastating cinematic experiences I've ever seen. Ralph Fiennes was eviscerated in that film, and their whole work project was disrupted by the traitor Schindler.
But also, let's be clear, there's a lot of controversy about the historical basis for those things.
Yeah, I mean, it turning the Holocaust into some sort of allegory of redemption. In many respects,
it was fictional.
Where it happened, it was smart policy, and where it was extreme, it's all simply a figment of the Jews' imagination.
A lot of things have been exaggerated.
False flag cost. If you see the little girl running from the napalm in Vietnam, you can actually recognize the same actress's mother.
Oh, God.
False flag.
You guys.
Alternative facts.
Well, Matthew, I honestly think I'm going to watch this one. I mean, I'm not. I can't guarantee it. I never know when something like this is going to happen. But I just sent myself an email about it. I just took a picture of it as I wrote it down, and I get the sense most people I think take your suggestions on this program, and I, to the extent that I don't, it's only because I just don't have the time.
No, it goes without saying. I understand,
but.
I have a Twitter conflict to get into.
I just want to say, as a final thought, that this is one of those films that doesn't let anybody off the hook. Like, just because the character has like good intentions, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, it doesn't always work out. I feel like that's what's so sick about the other kind of Holocaust movies.
Does it let the Jews off the hook?
Right.
What's that?
Does it let the Jews off the hook?
I agree. All right, Michael. Enough.
Sorry.
Gosh. No, that drives me crazy about movies. It really does. I mean, you know, when I'm watching like, you know, just something where I just want to watch, you know, like The Bourne Identity or something, right? Where it's just like, I know what I'm watching. But any movie that purports to take it seriously and it works out, give me a break.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, this movie is a fresh break because he's caught between wanting to please his wife, wanting to enrich himself, but also wanting to do the right thing and also sort of have prestige. It's a very complicated movie. It's a very subtle movie, and it doesn't cheapen the horror of the Holocaust, even though it never actually depicts anything. There's no like fake out scene where they go into the showers and it's really a shower.
You guys really thought that Schindler's List cheapened the Holocaust? I mean, the Benigni movie did. I don't remember Schindler's List well enough, but that would be a straight-up cheap
movie. Oh, yeah, Schindler's List definitely did. I could go on a whole other segment.
Is it the equivalent of like all of the movies that have been made about slavery that always center on a white person liberating slaves or something? Is that like part of the critique?
That's a little bit of it, yeah. The main character is Oskar Schindler, who's a German, but it's more like he just, you know, he's fighting these stereotypes of Nazis. You know, he just has this great idea, and he succeeds, basically. There's this real heroic struggle that he then overcomes and saves all these people. There's no question that he is a good guy in the movie.
There's something to be said for movies that will draw massive audiences just to engage with the material as opposed to
it's more
serious.
Well, you know what I usually think about that? What I usually think about that is a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Yes.
If you go away from Schindler's List thinking that you understand what it's like about the Holocaust, you're not going to be curious to learn anything more or real.
It's almost worse.
I think that there are more people than we ever thought who are not curious to learn a single fucking thing about these things.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that impulse, but I feel like in the end, all things considered, it's
had no idea it was so bad. Well, thank God Oskar Schindler was there.
That, you know, that girl in the shithole, she was gleaming, looked so beautiful, the light on her face, you know?
That girl was quite a piece of ass, even.
Oh,
even when she was in the ditch. I completely understand when Renee Fiennes was breaking his commitments to try to get her.
I barely even remember Schindler's
List. Naked broad running around. Well, how bad could that be?
But the movie that you're recommending, you know, most people aren't gonna see.
Matthew.
Well, most people listen to this program, aren't
Matthew, you know, that was the question I always had about Schindler's List. Was always like, even taking everything aside, it was just the preamble. It's like, what did this guy do to get where he was to be that? Like, he had to have been an asshole to be in the position to do what he did.
Yes, but
well,
then
he was
it's
similar
like a
to the character in this. You know, he was allowed to run a factory. He was allowed to get some Jewish slaves to let him keep running his factory. That was basically his
right.
He had a regarding Henry moment, right, where he was hit by a bus.
Oh, that's what it was.
Then, yeah, isn't that that's
a Harrison Ford movie?
I get those two mixed up. Schindler's List and regarding
Henry. He was bitten by a radioactive Jewish spider.
Really. All right, Matthew, we got to go. I don't have much time, but I appreciate it.
The Jews really had a raw deal. Thank God Oscar Schindler was there. Whatever happened to that hot one? I never knew there could be a Jew stripper before.
I just want to give one last shout out to a play that a friend and a coworker that I've collaborated on before named Hollis James just made. It's going up in the East Village. It's called Kyle. It's about his personal struggle with cocaine addiction. So I'm sure it'll appeal to this audience. I just want to say it's a great play. It's funny and it's dramatic, and everybody should go see it.
Send Michael a link. We'll put it on the blog.
Okay, will do.
All right. Thanks, Matthew. Always
great. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Talk to you later.
I want to read more about the Holocaust now.
All right. We're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Hey, folks, don't forget, this program relies on your membership for 96.3% of its funding, give or take. I don't know. We don't keep books, frankly.
Counter to stereotype.
But you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you become a member, we give you some extra content every day. And just a nice warm feeling. Also, you can support this program by buying your Amazon or Jet.com crap through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. Also, JustCoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee, Tea, or Chocolate. Use the coupon code Majority. Get 10% off. That coffee is great. I will be here on Monday with Masha Gessen. See you in the fun half.
Say to Napu Pay.